I see that it is broadcast time. I apologize for that hiss. I decided to mic my amp today for some reason. It's like I was actually thinking, I've got so much equipment and so many variables that I can do. I just want to use everything and do everything. So I just want to make use of all my stuff. So this is something that I don't, like usually when I play my electric, I plug it directly into the board. But today I'm miking the amp, so that's why you hear that hiss. I think it's, other than the hiss, I think it sounds a little beefier, a little better. Plus it's got that, the amp has got some pretty nice onboard effects that I have set just the way I like them. Hee hee. I've got a delay, and I think it's either a chorus or a flanger. I think it's a flanger. But I'm not just going to play guitar the whole time today, like a dipshit. I've got something in Logic Pro that I whipped up, was it last night or this morning? I can't even remember. But I was playing around with just like the five first notes of the C scale. Actually, what inspired it was this patch that I discovered, I found! But it's from a third party. Is that what you call it? A second party? I don't know. It's not a Logic Pro patch. It's called the OB something. What is it called? I got a Windows in the way. OBXD. And apparently this was like a famous synthesizer. Or I think maybe it's a slight variation. It's like the OBX1 or something like that. I don't know what it was. But it's something like OBXD. So, and one of the synthesizers claims to fame is that it was used on Van Halen Jump. So I can actually demo that. They've got a patch for Jump. And luckily, the OBXD works with the Logic Pro library, so that makes it much easier. You can just search for Jump. So, now, problem is, of course, reaching the keyboard. Oh, let's see. So that's Jump. But let's see. Oops. That's it. That's it. So that's. I don't think it sounds all that jump-like. I don't know. I think there are other sounds like within Logic Pro's other instruments. There are other patches that are not even part of this OBXD synthesizer that sound more jump-like. But supposedly, might even sound a little more, little Final Countdown-y, a little Europe-like. Anyway, so I switched it to Jump, and I'm going to change it back to something, the patch that I found, Vangelis Hymn. Vangelis, of course, being a famous New Age musician that I never really got into, but so let's play Vangelis Hymn. So if SMJ's listening, doesn't this sound kind of Red Martian-y? Like there's some old Red Martian stuff that I think you may have used a patch similar to this. Vangelis Hymn. So anyway, I'll play you what I cooked up. It just repeats over and over. But I guess the thing of note for this patch is it's got those five first notes in the major scale. But the bass line, it goes descending from C to B flat to A flat back to B flat. So that is kind of confounds the major minor tonality a little bit. So basically I'm dealing with this scale. which is kind of the first half is major and the second half is minor. So it's got a root 2, major 3rd, 4th, 5th, then a flat 6, flat 7, and then back to the root again. So the bass line is moving in that minor scale tonality, and then the upper register is moving in that major scale way. And I tried plugging in a Logic Pro's auto drummer to this, but it didn't sound very good. So I actually programmed a beat, and I just have it match some of the rhythm with some of the keys that I'm playing in this Vangelis hymn. So. Oh, one other fun thing that I did. I was playing around with a random pitch. And this is the hi-hat. I'll mute the Vangelis hymn for now. I'll just play this drum track. Hear how that hi-hat is kind of random? It actually is random. I used the MIDI operations to randomize the pitch, the quote-unquote pitch, which actually maps to two different drums, hi-hat 1 and hi-hat 2, just to randomize it. And then just randomize it between F sharp 2 and G 2, and those happen to be the keys that trigger hi hat 1 and hi hat 2. So if I click operate only, I just randomize the whole drum pattern again. But you can't really. I think there's no need to keep doing that. It's random enough that I think no one's going to detect a pattern over 8 bars. It's kind of catchy. I like it. Yeah! So. A little bit weird. It's kind of a little bit hard to solo over. So the scale I'm dealing with again. One, two, three, four, five. There. It's that minor six that's tripping me up. Of course, you can always default back to pentatonic, blues pentatonic minor. But it's important to hit that major third. See, that sounds kind of dissonant in a way. Those of you who are extremely astute listeners might remember when I was I did one of my shows about Unbreak My Heart, and I was talking about this little sequence of notes that fits into the kind of a diminished scale. And normally when you hear that, you pretty much, I tend to think, melodic minor. But this also fits in to... this funny scale, this, I don't even know what you call it, like a major Ionian mode with a flat 6 and a flat 7. There's the major 3rd, if you're in C. Major 3rd is going to be E natural. three, four, five, six. So the flat six. That's where it starts getting weird, is right at that flat six. That's the confounded major minor ism. So let me try soloing over that a little bit more. It's kind of hard. It's hard for me, okay? 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 It's hard for me. The minor seven is easy. There, I hit that. See, I don't even know what note that is. I guess it's a G sharp. Major third. Minor sixth, there it is. That's enough. That's about all the mileage I can get out of that, I think. Anyway, but so it's very kind of simple, and yet it's got an underlying complexity of that major minor ambiguity. Shall we see? I don't even have Skype turned on. It's possible somebody might want to call. Let me start up Skype. You can hear the startup noises. Oh, if it even makes them anymore. I don't know. They keep changing Skype. No, it didn't make them anymore. Ooh, Stephen Jones messaged me. 9:02 a.m. Oh, he said, Mama! I don't know why. I don't know. I think I got to change these strings, too. I've been playing my acoustic quite a lot lately, because I just changed the strings, and I've been pretty much thrilled with the snappiness and the newness and the goodness of the intonation of the new strings. God damn it, that buzz is annoying. Maybe it doesn't annoy you as much, but it bothers me, man. Hear that massive screw up? I pushed the string completely off the neck. So I think these strings are pretty good in terms of intonation, but I think in terms of snappiness, they're starting to fail a little bit. And the thing is, I don't play this electric as much as I play my acoustic. So I was thinking about, listening. Thank you, Stephen, for listening. I wonder who else is listening. I don't even check listeners anymore. I find it's like there's no percentage. Oh, somebody's calling. Who could it be? Hello.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Oh, hey, it's working.
Woohoo! It's working.
I just plugged in this crappy headset.
Oh.
I was listening to your show.
Awesome.
As religiously as I do.
Yeah. As all must. It is a requirement for being on SDF, is you have to worship at the altar of the sound show.
Well, you sound in good spirits. And I wanted to clarify, if somebody starts Skype and you say, I'm going to start Skype, and then they go, oh, well, he messaged me 902. Does it mean that I can call you?
Yeah, definitely. You can always call me, and if for some reason, okay. I think that you're not going to interrupt the course of my show or something, or screw up my plan. I try to put a rein on my Asperger's for these things and just kind of go with the flow, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was listening to your tune. Did you said it was Vangelis?
Yeah, that's the name of the patch. Vangelis, I guess. Vangelis hymn. I thought it sounded kind of Red Martian-y. Like it reminded me of some stuff that I've heard you on, like maybe not Red Martian, but what was the name of your outfit? Head cleaner. Yeah. Ooh, what you got? Just C to G, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from Do Re Mi Fa So from C to G. That's all I was playing.
Right, but your bass line
was minor. It was kind of like C to B flat to A flat.
Like that?
Yeah.
Is that right? Or am I overcomplicating it?
Well, it's just C is the first bass note, then B flat is the next one, and then A flat is the next one.
Oh, A flat.
Yeah. So it just kind of like the upper notes are minor, and then the other notes are major. So it's like this. I don't even know what you call that scale. It would be like a major scale with a flat 6 and a flat 7. I don't know.
Oh, is that? It ends on the G.
Yeah, I guess.
Right, and then goes back to C.
It recycles. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun.
Cool. And then you were playing, but you went harmonic minor on your guitar solo.
Maybe did. Yeah, I also did some pentatonic kind of bluesy stuff too. But I find that that was kind of a hard scale. I was hitting the wrong notes and stuff. But ultimately, it's like maybe what note is wrong? That's always the thing. But I was trying to stick to that scale.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear the notes probably.
Oh, it's just a C scale, but then like the sixth and the seventh, you flat them. So C, D.
Oh.
C, D, yeah. E, F, G, A flat, B flat, C.
Am I getting the third? Flattened the third.
The third is major. you're playing a tritone there, I think.
I know I am.
Tritone. Doom. What kind of keyboard do you have going there? Like what kind of patch or music or instrument or whatever?
It's a Yamaha. It's one of those Yamaha pianos, digital pianos with the weighted 88 keys and.
Oh wow.
It's like the. Just a step or two above the low end.
Oh, okay.
So it's just it's just a controller. I use it because it's a weighted controller, basically. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
It also has a nice piano. Well, a real piano sounds not much nicer. You know this, but
yeah. Well, actually, I kind of like the Logic Pro piano sound better than I like our real piano in the house. I mean, I know that's like kind of weird. It might be that just like the room is so bad that we have a grand piano. So I don't know. Nice. It doesn't sound great, but Logic Pro can like tailor the sound and have this artificial perfect room. So I think it sounds better, but that's kind of blasphemous, but.
No, it's fine. Cause it's all like pianos. Pianos are, completely analog instruments, and depending on where you are in a room and how it's tuned, how it's been maintained.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this, but pianos apparently have age, and just like, they get to a point where it's like, okay, well, it's just, it's going to be exceeding losses. So, it's like, it's time to recycle the piano.
Okay.
They'll go like you can get this. You'll get it's like grand piano, used, not well maintained, and then somebody comes in and they tune it up. Well, I got it to the best that it's going to tune up.
Right.
And then you play it, it sounds like a honky-tonk piano, like something that's been in a smoky bar. Well,
I worry about ours, or Jim's, rather. I call it ours, but it's really Jim's, because it's been moved across the country, and it sat outside in the freezing cold for a while. It was in the garage for a while, and then like some guys finally moved it upstairs. So I don't know if it's in the best shape. Like, I don't know if something happened to the wood or something. So it's possible that like the tone has suffered in that piano. I don't know. I'm not an expert.
It could, but like you said, something I've got to do this weekend is set up my my MIDI patcher, because I have that's what I use as one of those Eddyroll MIDI patchers, so that I can get all my MIDI cables organized into Logic.
Okay.
And it's like the biggest fight I have with Logic. If you've ever had to externally route MIDI stuff.
I don't really deal with physical MIDI routing cables and things like that, but yeah.
You have to go to, there's a special page where you basically show all the virtual patching of the real cables.
Oh.
No. And it's like, so you have to do it twice. Not only do you have to plug in the real physical cable, but then you have to go tell Logic where you have it plugged in.
Okay. And it's like, so are you using that, like, you're connecting Logic to some external keyboards, and are you using Logic to control the keyboards, or the other way around?
Well, what I do is I use, like, for instance, I'm using this Yamaha to be a master keyboard, to be like a controller, because it's weighted, it's ADA keys. Mm. Then I run that into Logic, and then in Logic I can patch to any one of the MIDI synths that I have.
Oh, I see. But there's no way you could just skip Logic and just patch directly from your keyboard to the synths?
Oh, yeah.
You could.
but then I can't record sequences into Logic. Okay,
I see.
So that's the whole point.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah, I just have my Alesis V61 keyboard. So it's just a little plastic MIDI controller.
Okay.
It sits under my iMac. My studio is just, it's just in my bedroom. It's, everything fits on a desk. It's very small. Yeah. It's very compact. So I think I don't really want to buy any more stuff, you know?
Yeah. My studio is pretty old school. I've got like a full 24 track mixed recording console. You've seen pictures of it.
I think so.
But it's like, if you want to have like a analog studio, because that's what it is. It's not. I don't do any soft instruments.
Okay.
It's all hardware. So it's a bit cumbersome. But I go and I look at other people's studios, and it's like a laptop. Maybe a little tiny 37 key controller.
Yeah.
And then little chaos pads and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, that's what I have. I just, I want to just do compact. So how many synths do you have? How many physical synthesizers do you have?
Right now in front of me, let's see. There's a cascade of three drum machines, and then 1, 2, 3, 4... on this rack, so 4 cents on this rack, 3 cents on this rack, 2 cents on this rack, and then the modular setup, which has 4 MIDI interfaces on it.
A modular synth, is that where you just buy these little units and kind of string them together?
Well, this is the one that is a a portion of the setup for Billy Corgan's modular synth.
Oh, okay.
So it's not, it's modules in the in the sense that they're just little modules, but I don't move them around. It's like I installed them. I moved them around for like the first year trying to get like the patch flow. And then it's stuck that way. I haven't changed it at all.
All right. So how much time do you spend in your music studio? Are you in there every day, like fooling around or?
Every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes just depending on, how this goes, state of mind, workload, what you're doing.
Right.
You might just plink around.
Right.
One thing I do that's a very horrible practice, extremely horrible practice, is that I'll be noodling around or playing something, and I'll just be like, oh, that's a great idea. And then I just record it. I record like 10 or 15 seconds, uh-huh. and then I forget about it.
That is exactly what I do. I have a billion unfinished, like, 10-second loops that I've saved, and they have horribly titled. So I think I've gone through them sometimes on some shows. I, like, play all my little partial projects.
Mine are all called idea and then the date.
Okay. I title idea them things like fun. There's one of them called fun, I remember.
I don't know if the date matters, but at least the date can be a metric that I can go back and say, well, this idea might be a developed idea of this one, and they can go together.
And the thing is like any of those things, you can just loop them and stretch them out to 3 minutes, do some vocals over it, make up some lyrics, and then you have a song, you know?
A demo. Yeah, at least a demo, right?
Well, what's the difference between a demo and a song? Like a demo is a little unpolished, or?
That's another problem that I have, is that I make demos and then I release them.
Ah, okay. So you don't clean things up too much?
No. It's like, well, what happened? I'll tell you what happens is that I will make a demo, and then I'll try to get the band members to go into a proper studio, which we could probably do it here, but record, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, get all the room sound and all that stuff. And then it's like I can't get people quit, or, you know, they're busy, or nothing happens.
Huh.
So I'm running into that dilemma right now where I've got a backlog of music. Basically two full albums.
Right.
That I'm working on right now.
What would you release them under? Would they be Red Martian or?
Yeah, they'd have to be. It's kind of
everything's red. Maybe you should change it up, you know? Make some new projects.
I don't know. We got our blue check mark on Spotify, man. I can't believe it.
What does that mean, blue check mark?
It's what they do for artists that they've verified.
Uh huh. Okay. They.
So
you're officially on Spotify. Red Martian is officially.
It's okay.
Congratulations.
Thanks. It's. I didn't even know it happened until I looked.
Okay.
But it's a digital currency thing. You know, it's like, Christy O'Twisty on SDF.
Oh, I know her, yeah.
Yeah, she's been doing open mic where she just plays either her late husband's record collection or some of her favorites.
Okay.
But she made a post about on Twitter. Her account got locked, and she thought it was because she made a comment about blue check mark profiles. Basically promoting or advertising. Like, so it's a big thing on Twitter. It's like you'll see like a celebrity with a blue check mark, but then they're trying to sell you Coca-Cola or something like that.
Oh, that's not
good.
Have
you seen that?
No, I have not. I the only reason I have I use Spotify is to listen to Joe Rogan.
Oh, for a podcast?
Yeah, I listen to most of my music, my streaming music on YouTube, but...
I gotcha.
But I just searched for Red Martian on Spotify, and I see you've got 10 songs, it says here.
Yeah. So here's the thing is, it's got that blue check mark, but I'm also trying to...
Verified artist.
Yeah, I'm trying to fight with them to give me access, because the main image for Red Martian is a frickin' tricycle.
Yeah, I see that. What would you rather it be, Plop the Bunny, or...?
Well, I can tell you why it's the tricycle.
Okay, why?
Because the biggest selling song is the cover of Daisy Bell, the cover of Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, Daisy okay. It says Daichi or Daichi. Is that some kind of alternate spelling?
It's probably Daichi.
And I see a number here. I see 11,007 after Daichi. Does that mean number of plays or?
I don't know what that is, but that might be plays.
And no other song has that number next to it.
I know, but, yeah.
So I guess we're looking at the same thing here.
I know.
Red Martian Spotify.
Can you believe it? Like, that's probably the whole reason why it got verified is I haven't been able to trace this back, but I heard from other people that American Dad played it in one of the episodes.
Really?
And that's what triggered.
But you haven't verified that. You're not sure. That may just be a rumor.
That came from a lot of people I've never met before. So,
you trust it.
It's the highest volume sale of any other song.
Well, so you're actually making money from this, from Red Martian on Spotify. Yeah, there's a little bit of an income.
There is, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. I've never bridged that gap in my career as an amateur musician. I never like made money from it.
Oh, I can tell you that I've lost way more money though. I mean, because you know, if you're self-releasing stuff,
right? Yeah,
it costs a lot of money to make records and things like that. It's but at the same time, it's just like where else, you know, it's not like you're. What else are you supposed to do? You're supposed to wait to get signed or something?
I don't know. Yeah. So have you played any? Did you get any feedback on your music from Billy Corgan? did he critique anything or like listen to it or say, hey, that's cool? Or
it was just when I was working in what he called Synthland. Where I was getting all his modular synths all organized and everything like that. He would just come in every once in a while and just, you know, kind of listen what I was doing and say, that's cool.
Okay.
Like, yeah. But that's it. I mean, not anything formal or anything.
So you were saying that he uses burner. I think you said this in PCM. He uses burner cell phones.
Sure. A lot of people do that.
Like celebrity type people or people in the public eye?
I would say people that you know they're sort of private individuals, and but they still have to interact with other people, and they have to organize things, especially like project oriented people, where they want to like have a clear not bifurcation, but like a clear start and end to a project.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I see. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's people like other people I've talked to that worked with him said that he was paranoid. And I was like, I don't think so. No, I think that it's just like he wants a clear start and end because he doesn't want somebody going after him and says, hey, Billy, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? Hey, okay. We should do this. Hey, I should play bass in your band, dude.
maybe I should.
Well, you know that I asked him that, right?
What did you ask him?
I asked him that if I could play bass.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. Yeah. what did he say?
Because he was working. He said no, you can't play in my band.
Well, that's
because it was he just got this he got a replacement drummer for Jimmy Chamberlain.
Uh-huh.
Is it Jimmy? Not Jimmy. Sorry. Who's the drummer?
I don't know who any of the people are except for the Asian guy, the Japanese guy. But Iha, I guess. He was maybe he's old. I don't know. He may have been replaced. I don't know.
And then he was like one of the first people that left. I think.
Okay.
Either him or Darcy.
Yeah, that's the woman, right? The woman is Darcy.
The woman. See, and there's the point is that if there's gonna be a bass player in Billy's band, it has to be a woman.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Well.
So anyways, because he was asking me, he was like, what do you think about moving out to Chicago?
Jeez.
So that I could work in the studio.
Yeah.
And because at the time, he was like just flying me out for 2 weeks at a time.
Wow.
And I was just like, I could play bass in your band. He's like, no, you can't play bass in my band.
You know, I didn't. Speaking of Joe Rogan, I actually saw him interviewed on Joe Rogan fairly recently.
Oh really?
Yeah, and I didn't realize he was that big a star. Kind of like I didn't realize he was that rich. That was the thing I didn't realize.
And he's got Grammys and all sorts.
Just
of stuff.
Astounds me that like I mean, you get what is the Siamese Dream was the '90s album that came. That was the biggest hit, right? That sold the most. I think
it was either that or what's the other one?
I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, he
So why did Smashing Pumpkins make it so big and Red Martian didn't make it as big? Like, I always wonder about that. Like, what makes one piece of pop rock better than the other, kind of, you know? Like, what is the secret that, like, propels something to superstar status while something else stays kind of in the margins?
Oh, you know? I totally think that exposure and just being in the right place at the right time, because even the thing is that for a lot of bands that, you know, maybe they can't read music or they don't have training or anything like that, but they work really hard. If you hear them like in their practice room, they probably sound like crap. Or you can hear like a little bit of a gem, but you don't hear that polished sound that you do like when they record a major label album.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of people that, or sometimes it's just an individual or two individuals, that really polish the turd, so to speak.
Huh, okay.
And make them sound really good. And then that's what, if, you know, and then once you're in, you know, the speakers on Hobby Lobby in the grocery store, you know, you get into that, market of, because it's not teenagers will make you, I guess they'll make you popular with kids that don't have money, right? But once you get their parents that on your side, and I think that's what happened with Smashing Pumpkins, is that they got into that Matchbox 20, what's a Maroon 5 kind of category.
Okay, I never heard of them, but yeah.
You know, where it's basically like late boomer Gen Xers that they're established, they got money, they're shopping at Albertsons, and they hear this rock song, and then they see the guy's picture on the cover of People magazine. You know what I'm talking about? I'm not trying to be negative or silly.
No, not at all.
But it's like, you know, once you're into that system, and you just kind of have to ride it there.
I wonder, I mean, is Smashing Pumpkins still putting out albums, or are they still Smashing Pumpkins, or is it just Billy Corgan at this point?
Well, so the studio, which he called Pumpkinland, and apparently that place was closed down, he's moved elsewhere, but yeah, he would just call up random people. He, like, Linda Strawberry, I'm sorry. I'm butchering everybody's name. He would just call people and bring them in. And because he was working on an album of 25 songs or something like that. And then he would just get all the people that he wanted to work with him. But I don't think wasn't any original members.
Do you think being a massive celebrity, whatever, has made him strange personally? Like, do you think his personality is a little odd or quirky because of his being in the spotlight? Like, did that damage him in some way?
I think he is very, he's very determined and very, confident. And maybe he might not say that he is, but I think that he really is. You know, he knows what he's doing. He's running a business.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I've developed kind of an unhealthy fascination with celebrities lately. I'm always watching movies and looking up like who played who and like looking them up on IMDb and then like typing in their net worth and stuff like that. It's just not very flattering. It's not a flattering practice.
I think for musicians that you might consider alternative artists or underground artists.
Mm-hmm.
That there's this weird integrity thing. Like, for instance, if you say Green Day is punk rock.
Yeah.
and then you compare Green Day to, say, like
Sex
Millions
Pistols.
Of Dead. Yeah, or Pistols or Millions of Dead Cops. Some kind of hardcore. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Some kind of hardcore band. Or like 7 Seconds. That's a great example of 7 Seconds is a really, probably one of my favorite punk bands. Hardcore bands that never they maybe have got invited to play the Warped Tour, but it's like they never got the recognition that's, you know, someone like Green Day.
I've got 7 seconds up here on Wikipedia, and it says they disbanded in 2018.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Normally, they read the first sentence. 7 Seconds was an American hardcore punk band from Reno, Nevada. Like, right. a lot of bands that I don't, like, they say is, and they're still technically active. Like, a lot of these really old glam rock hair metal bands from the 80s are still active, you know? They're still making albums.
So, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is kind of El Nutso.
What do you think of Ian McKay?
I don't know. He was the Fugazi. Is he Fugazi or Black Flag or?
Well, Fugazi, Minor Threat, Teen Idols.
Well,
but he's run this label in DC called Discord.
Discord. Yeah, I've heard of Discord. Okay.
Yeah. So, but it's always been him and Jeff, the drummer for Minor Threat, are the ones that started this label, and it was all about putting on $5 shows and selling $5 albums.
Okay.
DIY. Where they put everything together. It's not that they're paying some other outfit to assemble things for them. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of, I have a lot of respect for that DIY ethic.
Yeah.
And do
you kind of like the poverty ethic? Like make it available to people, like kids who can't necessarily afford a lot or?
I think so. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I'll tell you the reason why I'm kind of hesitant here is because we were playing a show in Denton, Texas, and we had cassettes. This is like fairly early on, and cassettes, two EPs, and they're all DIY. You know, I printed them out on my inkjet printer and I dubbed them myself and all that. We made the labels and the artwork. A friend made the artwork. It was a collage art. And we were playing a show. And beforehand, we started handing out cassettes to like all the kids that were waiting outside the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And I handed one to this one guy. It's like, here you go. It's free. Mm-hmm. And he took it and he looked at it and he's like, I don't want your music. And he like threw it on the ground.
That's not nice.
And I was just like, wow, okay. And so I just picked it up and I like handed it to the next person.
All right. So you weren't angry or offended at the time? You just kind of shocked or?
No, because you're asking me like, because you don't know what other people are thinking, right? And it could have been that maybe he was playing in like the other band and he had that sort of, he was just like, I want to be on the Warped Tour, you know, or I want to play Lollapalooza, you know.
Have you ever attended a Lollapalooza?
No. Have you?
Yeah, I did back in 92, I think. It was either Lollapalooza. Well, there's the one where Ministry and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and the Red Hot Chili Peppers were there.
Holy heck.
Yeah, it was a big, I went with a bunch of, it was like either right after I graduated from high school or right before. So yeah, it was one of the few concerts I've been to. I'm not really a big concert person because, you know, it's like they don't sound very good. It's really more of an event. It's like a big social, it's like the whole sensory experience. And I guess I often get like kind of frustrated that I can't hear the music that well. It's like, why am I here? I'm just crowded in with a bunch of people and my back hurts. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I really don't like outdoor festivals. Mm. I don't like shows that go on and on and on. And you're like, that, especially if it's outdoors. Mm. I don't like
that. Okay. Do you find that the sound is kind of bad? Or
the sound is bad. It's hot. there's a lot of drunk people yelling.
Yeah, I broke up a fight at an orgy concert once. That's my hyper masculine claims to fame.
Oh wow, yeah, I'm sure people would be really threatened by you.
Well, it was kind of an instinctive thing. It's like these people were getting into it, about to start beating each other up, and I just kind of leaped in and said, "What did he do?"
Do you know who it is?
Who
they were?
No, they were strangers. It was just, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, but it was like this instinctive thing. Yeah. So it was one of my life events.
Random act of kindness.
Or something. I don't know.
What was that arpeggio you just did?
This one? Just E major.
Oh, okay, E major. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I turned off my amp mic because I couldn't stand the hiss anymore. But it's still being picked up in the air from my vocal mic, so I guess you can barely hear it or whatever.
No, I hear it very clearly. It's very loud.
Is it? Cool.
Very loud.
Cool. So are you happy to be back in Seattle?
We've survived the heat wave.
Oh yeah, right. I had some. Yeah, that was the big news, right? Yeah. Well, Portland. Yeah. I have a friend in Portland, and I guess it got to 118 or something, and something ridiculous like that in Portland, just totally unfounded, unprecedented.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it was 10. It hit 109 or 111 or something. Jeez. Like it doesn't matter. It's just like, that after that day. I went because all the windows in this place are vinyl frames, just because that's the construction. And I went and looked at them. And it's like there's all this gray goop that dripped down and congealed in the bottom, and they're all sliding windows, and they don't want to slide very well anymore. Oh. So the tracks got warped.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I heard about the power cables melting or whatever, the roads buckling. Very, very apocalyptic. And then even in like British Columbia, like near Kamloops, I have a friend in Kamloops who was up to like 115 or something like that. So ridiculous.
Yeah, you know what? I think that Portland and up in Vancouver, BC, parts of that got it much worse than Seattle.
Hmm.
And maybe it's because... Just because how the wind, you know, flows through here, how it changes, and then of course Elliott Bay, the body of water. So, it's still, you know, 109 is
that's nothing to sneeze at.
Pretty toasty. Yeah, in my studio, it got to, I think it peaked at about 96 degrees.
Oh man.
Yeah.
So you don't have air conditioning, I guess. You don't have central air.
We have a rolling portable air conditioner, and. In the past, we've used it to, we've got a 20 by 30 room that's kind of a living room with the kitchen. And then that also has a hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, we've used that during the summer to cool that area. But it was just like, we tried it on Friday. Friday was the one that, you know, got to 99. And it was like, by 3:30 or 3 in the afternoon, it was just losing. It could not cool the room.
Right.
So we moved it to the bedroom, which is 10 by 15,
mm-hmm.
and then just closed that. And that did it. That was
okay.
So we just kind of hunkered down.
What was the temperature in the bedroom? Like,
the hottest it got was 80 degrees.
Okay.
And that was on Sunday.
That's doable. That's normally how hot my room gets is 80. So,
It gets to the edge of being a little uncomfortable.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm getting used to it. I'm getting used to more heat, which I guess everyone's going to have to do. They're just going to have to, you know, this is the new normal, as they say.
Is it?
Well, I don't know. I think so.
So what's the firework status for you? Are they legal or
no?
Illegal?
They've been banned this year in El Dorado County. They've been they're not legal. But I assume that I'm going to hear some anyway because this is a county of lawbreakers. This is a very freedom oriented, fuck the government kind of a county. They hate Sacramento and they hate the federal government. So
sounds like Seattle.
Maybe I'm in a red California. You know, this is a pickup trucks and guns California. So probably I'll hear both gunfire and fireworks on the 4th.
You know, there's so much in common though with like Antifa.
Yeah,
I wish they'd realize that. You know, it's just like
join forces.
If you hate Sacramento, I mean, you're kind of an anarchist.
Yeah, that's true. Anarchist libertarian. So
last night was pretty it was noticeable that people were out having fun and then there was some fireworks going out.
Okay.
And it was good because it wasn't it was just people having fun and enjoying themselves as opposed to people destroying things. So I think that I'm hoping that all that stuff, like the handful of people that are doing it for the thrill of rioting or causing trouble, that those, they've moved on to other places, and then just the people that live here can go out and have fun and be loud, loud and crazy.
That time that I visited you and Dave K and R-Dot in Seattle in like 2007, I think it was. That was my only time I've ever been to Seattle. My one and only Seattle visit.
It's changed a lot since you've been here, for sure.
Has it? In what way?
Yeah. Oh, the population has just jumped.
Really?
A lot of people have moved here. And, you know, Facebook's here now. Apple has an office here. Google has office. So we have this tech bro influx.
Tech bro.
Yeah, they call it tech bro.
Nice sounding chords. It's kind of I like that sound on the piano. It sounds like my Bösendorfer grand sound on in Logic.
Oh, I was gonna say that Jim's piano was a Bösendorfer.
No, it's a Steinway.
I'm just hammering out chords.
Yeah, it sounds nice.
Just using it's got stereo speakers in it, and then so based on where you are in the. Like when you hit a high key, you're over like on the right speaker.
Right. I like that kind of stereo piano thing.
And it's got a built-in reverb too, but I always forget how to turn it on because you have to hold a button and then press a key. It has all these weird little things that I just cannot memorize. Like if you hold down the three bottom keys and then press a key somewhere in the middle, you can transpose the keyboard.
Oh, wow. Does it have other sounds like organ or clavichord?
Oh yeah, it's got
harpsichord.
If I can remember how to change, let's see. Oh, I think I like the vibraphone.
Ooh, that's nice. Ooh, that's really nice. Yeah, I'm liking your. Is this a Yamaha? You say?
Yeah. When I was in Japan, they had I'd always go to music stores like around Ochanomizu. There's just tons of music shops there, and of course they have loads of things out that you can just play on, and stuff that we would never get, just because everybody plays music basically, or they have formal, like everybody has formal music theory training. It's like
everyone in Seattle. That's like
no, in Japan.
In Japan. Okay, I see.
Right. It's like
I wasn't keeping up with the conversation. You know what Hannibal Lecter says? If you can't keep up with the conversation, best not try to join it at all.
But anyway, so I was going through there and just looking at all the new stuff that they have as far as, of course, digital pianos. There's lots of great stuff. And Yamaha, I think Yamaha probably makes the best digital pianos. With great sounds and, you know, just good price.
Yamaha's been around for many years. So that's like, when did they start? Like the 18-something? Like it's a real old company?
Yeah.
They make motorcycles? Or they make like everything?
I think that's probably a different division, but in Nagoya, I think they have a piano factory. And they mass produce very good pianos.
Yeah, I guess that's what the first thing. If you say, what do you associate with Yamaha? I would say pianos. That's like the number one thing. Jim actually bought a Yamaha piano for the church in Maryland. It was his gift to them. So, yeah. They have a nice Yamaha piano. So do you ever think to yourself sometimes that the keyboard is a superior instrument to the guitar?
It's certainly different. Mm. And I think I told you about, like, because I trim my nails back a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, like, for right hand?
Yeah.
For a classical guitarist to have to play piano is kind of...
A little iffy.
That's annoying.
Yeah, it's always a compromise. Like I keep my nails fairly short. I just trimmed them actually on the right hand. And I find that they sound better, like, right after I trim them. It's like they're just sharper, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't use a file. I just clip, you know? I don't file. I don't smooth or anything.
Okay.
So it's kind of a raw, sharp sound.
I've seen some classical guitarists that have, like, super long nails. And I'm in the camp with you where I have them short.
Really short, yeah.
Yeah,
because I mean it's practical. They're always getting in the way and breaking. And
that's
like,
right.
I bent one back the other day. Like bend a nail back, and it, like you get this line of bruised kind of blood right around the quick of the nail.
Yeah,
painful, very very painful.
It hurts real bad. I know. It's got nice synthy string sound.
Yeah. So when are you going back to Japan? Do you have a plan for that? Or are you?
Well, right now, the consulate is kind of backed up as far as visas are concerned. I still have to apply for a visa because there's no tourist visa. And then the Olympics are screwing things up too.
Ooh, okay.
So they're really, I just decided not to go forward with my paperwork at this time because of the Olympics. But once the Olympics are over, or once they start getting to the end, then I'm going to get my my temporary visa so I can do another stay. I have to – they told me that when I get there, that's when I have to apply for the residence.
Oh, okay. Is this a more long-term plan to make Japan a more permanent place to live?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like you want to eventually just totally move there, right?
I don't think totally move there because there is definitely benefits of living in the U.S.
Hmm. Like what?
Like what?
Yeah. McDonald's?
No, McDonald's is better in Japan.
7-Eleven is certainly better. That's like a whole other level of 7-Eleven in Japan.
Right. We were talking about Kip's Big Boy in Calm. In Tower Records, it's just like, why does Tower Records still exist in Japan but it's bankrupt in the U.S.? Well, because for any American company to operate in Japan, they have to be operated by a Japanese-based company. And so there's all of these relics of companies that have tried to start businesses in Japan that are still succeeding because they're just really well run. 7-Eleven is a good example. Mm-hmm. I think Lawson's was also a American company that's now bankrupt. There's of course Denny's, KFC, but those are probably going to stay around. But Denny's in Japan is way better than Denny's.
Oh, I've never been to Denny's in Japan. Well, I went to Japan once in 2001. I remember the 7-Eleven really struck me, just how nice it was.
Yeah.
Like how classy and nice, and everything's very clean and kind of manicured looking, you know.
Yes, all of the stuff, ready-made food. It's awesome. Oh, did you know about, did you know about the countdown clock?
No. What is that?
If you go to anonradio.net/countdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were talking about Final Countdown.
Okay.
Check it out.
Countdown. Okay. Yeah. Oh, it is now 16:58 with 14 seconds to 16:59 UTC.
Yeah. So, and then it'll refresh. So we're going to be in the last minute real soon, right?
Yes.
So
this is the final minute.
Yeah.
Final Countdown.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So it's useful for you because you never know when you're live or when you're going to get cut off.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I've always found that the Anon Radio clock is a little different from my clock.
It should be based on your clock, actually. That's why this one is more accurate. Yeah. So if your clock's wrong, it should show things wrong for you. Time is so complicated, man.
It is. With daylight savings and with time zones, it's too much for me.
Man. 20 seconds. 19.
20 seconds. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate 16, it. and playing your 14, Yamaha 13, for me. 12, and talking about Billy Corgan. 10, it was all very good.
9.
It was all excellent. 8,
7. Yes. 6. 5.
Bye. 4, bye. 3, 2.